So when we think about incarnation, ultimately, and we've looked at this process. By the way, did you guys, as you, those of you who walked through the primer and the details, there's a whole long list of verses of how Jesus ministered on the way. Do you guys take time to actually look those up and read them and consider them? If you haven't, I commend you if you did. That's awesome. If you did not, it's worth just looking at the pattern. We're going to look at that just a little bit. We're not going to read all of those. But the ideas that are revealed there, we're going to be looking at. It's really, really important. If this is a biblical idea, we would expect that living incarnationally would have been modeled. It would have been demonstrated somehow. And the best, first, maximum example of what it means to be incarnational would be Jesus, right? I mean, if anybody's going to image who God is, it would be God himself coming to flesh and incarnate, which I did not look up the root of that. Anybody know what the Greek or the root of that word is, carnate? It sounds like carnal, in the flesh. Or present. Meat, yeah, that carne. Yeah, I think that's what it is, but please don't quote that. That's, here he is in the flesh. God in the flesh. And you can have the description that Kate talked about, but the literal, the idea is it's God living in the flesh. And that's what Jesus was, and that's why it's not a new term theologically. So Jesus is our model, and we looked at this verse last week. We'll do it again. Hebrews 1:3. This was the declaration of Jesus' earthly life, how he lived. He is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature, and he upholds the universe by the word of his power. So whatever God is, eternity past, he was the exact picture of that, of all the important things. Obviously, there's an expanse and a power that was, because it was in the flesh, it was a package. Not all of it was revealed, but whatever was revealed was exactly the picture of what God is like. I had a discussion recently with somebody who said, well, I'm all about Jesus. I don't like the Father. What? Wait a minute. Well, the Father's in charge and Jesus is this night. No, you got your theology all backwards here. Right now, whoever you don't like your circumstances, Jesus is in charge. All authority on heaven and earth has been given to him. So if you have a problem with the way things are running, it is King Jesus right now that is making those calls. They're the same. They're the same. And so we can cherry pick attributes and create our own little God. That's what we do. And we're all tempted to do that. God is this way. Oh, he's not that way. Excuse me. You awake back there? Did you hear my mute call? You would have been awake if I let that go right in the mic. So there's this picture of Jesus' life that if we're going to be image bearers, God in the flesh, for those around us, demonstrating who he is, what he's like, and what he is, has desire is for this planet, there's a couple attributes. Number one is there is a dependence. There was a dependence on the Father. There was this trust relationship, which is not unique to Jesus' time on the earth. There was they exist, they coexist in mutual interdependence, mutual affection. Thank you, Dad. And for as long as we have a picture of history, what God has revealed of his story, they have existed in this role of mutual subjection and authority and responsible for and responsible to. It's the very nature of God. So that dependence, when we feel our flesh pushing, when we feel a sense and a desire to be independent, to have our way, to make up our own mind, to define what's true based on what we think, see, feel, have an affection for, we're stepping out of our ability to actually demonstrate Jesus in, or the God himself, the picture of God, the image of God in the flesh. We step out of it. They're diametrically opposed. We cannot be independent in spirit or in action and be an image bearer. We cease to be it. It is the flesh that causes that. When we think about the picture of the reigning king, and we all look forward to that day when Jesus comes back and sets it all right and establishes a new kingdom, and every tear is dried and every hurt is healed and it all is fixed and the new kingdom comes. This is a glorious place. But Jesus first, and he will be incarnate in his resurrected body. He will be back in this new form. Forever changed into this. He has a resurrected body now. He's not just coming back as some spirit. He is something now. And there's a form of a new flesh, a resurrected body flesh that he will be walking. So he's going to come again in this new flesh and reign. But in the meantime, and his modeling for us, if what it means right now in this age is that we must be willing to take on his pattern, which was not as a reigning king, but as a suffering servant. If we reject either one of those things, suffering or the idea of your identity as a servant, you will miss. You will miss. You are walking in the flesh and setting yourselves up to be independent. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to be a servant. Well, then you will not be an image bearer. Because that's the only way we can do it. Because Jesus is our example. Regardless of your role, in a position of great authority or wealth or whatever, or as in a prison somewhere, it's the same mentality, that same spirit we bring to it. So as our example, he said, Father, or follow me. That's the call, follow me. Just as I lived, I want you to live. Not exactly because he didn't have jobs and live in the U.S., but in general, his spirit, his attitude. And then this idea of sent to do something. It's not random. It's not whatever you decide. It is to be image bearers. You're not sent to find your destiny. You are sent to bear the image of God to the world around us. That's what we are. As the Father sent me, I send you. Well, how did the Father send him? As a representative of him in the flesh. It's this idea we have to wrestle with. The other piece of resting in the Jesus as our model is we have to stir ourselves up to have an affection for that, because every one of us will be prone in the flesh to have an entitled mentality, to think I deserve it, to think Jesus' death for me wasn't that big a deal. That's the trend. That's the flow of our flesh. And we have to intentionally, and it's one of the reasons we every week we want to revisit the glory of the cross and the resurrected Christ and the grace that's been shown to us and all that this flows into is our life is hidden in Christ. That's what we do. That's why we do it, is to refresh ourselves again in what's fundamentally true. What do I deserve? Judgment, hell, separation, isolation. What do I deserve? And what do I possess? And we celebrate it in song and prayer and remembering and being okay with saying, I'm a sinner in need of the grace of God today. That's my reality. Is that okay with you? Do you need the gospel today? Because if you don't need the gospel today, you won't have very much affection for Jesus. And his idea of modeling things for us won't have very much power in your life. Delight yourselves in the Lord. Delight yourselves in the Lord. The whole great commandment is given in a variety of ways, in a variety of places, but this idea of I am with you, give yourself to me, follow me, join yourself to me, be my bride, and I will lead you. I will lead you. When you think about another key to living incarnationally, so one is fixing our eyes on the example. The second one is to stay very, very connected. This is not one of those things where you can get an idea and just keep doing it for the rest of your life. Because if you do that, for sure you're going to do it in the power of the flesh. And there are pretty disciplined, determined people who go, okay, this is what God told me to do. I'm just going to keep doing it until I croak. And then there are those who forget it immediately after they heard it. Neither one is walking by the power of God. And so there's a quote John Hopler sent out in this little email we get. It was just encouraging to me. I'll read it to you quick. Because it relates to this connection. A man can no more take in a supply of grace for the future than he can eat enough today to last him for the next 6 months. Nor can we inhale sufficient air, inhale sufficient air into his lungs with one breath to sustain life for a week to come. We are permitted to draw upon God's store of grace from day to day as we need it. We are prone to think, if you give me the right information, you give me the right system, you give me the right encouraging thought, the right whatever, then we can, it's just human history. Especially the early church. Man, we got to systematize this. After constantly, we got to get a church calendar. That's what we need. We need to make sure everybody gets this. And here's the catechism, and here's all this stuff. If you do all this stuff, then you are a good Christian. Baloney. You are a good follower of Jesus when you are connected to the vine. When you seek your life's blood through Him daily, resting in the grace of God that is yours, claiming the promises, your behavior will only reflect that. And anything else is just religion. Here, do all these things. You're a good Christian. Did you do this? Did you do that? Did you keep that? Here's the checklist. There is no power. He's designed us at every level of our being, spiritual, relational, physical, to need things outside ourselves to flow in for us to be healthy. Absolutely fundamental truth. God has made us needy. We need air to flow in. We need food to flow in. We need care to flow in. We need grace to flow in. Without that connectivity, we will simply fall into our own version of a religion. Self-righteous, I check the box, leave me alone. And we miss the heart of God. And so that connection to God is lost when we declare that self-sufficiency in our own right behavior and our rules. Rules are really comfortable for most people. I hate them. Most people, it's very comfortable. Just tell me, where's the rules? What do I got to do? And I don't like them. But I understand now why that's such a safety place for many people. And I'm probably just rebellious, why I don't like rules. There's nothing noble in that hatred of rules. Please don't misunderstand that. I just don't like being told what to do. But it's not a safe place for me. For many, many people, just tell, am I okay? Am I okay? Am I okay? Am I doing it right? Everybody think okay about me? And maybe it's just my own brokenness. I just stopped caring. When I was about 16 years old, I just stopped caring what people think. And that was, again, not a noble thing. It's one of the ways I push people away. That connection clarifies our identity, and that connection accesses the power of God. Because if He's really going to ask us to do hard, scary things, i.e. faith things, those are not the kind of things you can do in the power of your flesh for very long. We need that connection. When we think about Jesus, it's also instructive to just stop and pause a little bit, because like that list of verses is along the way, it's at a wedding, you just interrupted. You read through there, you go, well, yeah, well, He was out preaching, but the point of all those passages is that it wasn't central to His preaching that He did ministry. Even though He was out doing He was on the way doing different preaching situations, or he's stepping into a crowd and then somebody interrupts Him from the side or through the roof, or so you just see all these kind of random interruptions to His life, and he does ministry. He's aware, He's present, he engages with people. So if we're called to follow Jesus, and we look at the life of Jesus, it's important to kind of pause a little bit. Because there are people out there who go, no, it would look exactly like Jesus. You would be an itinerant preacher, and you just travel around doing preaching. And you'd hang it, over your, what do they call those, sandwich boards, or on your shopping cart, or your banners, or websites, or something. You just, this is what I do, I proclaim. But when you get into the church age, that's really not what Paul advocated to live out the kingdom and the rest. So what are the differences? So He's our model, but what are some of the significant differences between Jesus' ministry and how we will minister, how He was incarnate and how we will be incarnate? What comes to mind? No, just how we're called to be, present tense, as the church in 21st century America. What's different? Okay, is there an... I'm talking about inherent things, not sinful things, not wrong things, just the situation, the circumstances. What are different is about his ministry, and you're in one there. I don't want you confessing here. I just want you to really, well, what's different? I mean, I have to adapt. I have to adapt this model and somehow contextualize it in my life. So what's different?
Yep. So I'd say it's not my job to be Jesus. My job is to allow Jesus to flow through me. So that's a difference. I mean, he was allowing the Father to orchestrate stuff. But that's a difference is I have to allow Jesus to be Jesus, not me be Jesus.
But what was unique about Jesus being Jesus? Because we do it exactly the same way. He was not glorifying himself. He was allowing the Father. So there is no distinction there in our circumstance. We are to connect to God and let his will flow through us. So that's not a distinction.
We have to own cars. We can't walk everywhere.
Yeah, well, it's just culture. It's a very different culture. People aren't just standing out in front. I mean, if you go to a third world country, you get a very different picture of what life, and this is one of the reasons it's so fun to support Mike Cater in Nepal, because it's kind of like Jesus culture. There's a whole lot of people without a whole lot to do sitting around. And so you can gather a crowd, you can preach. It's not that distinct. In where we live, it's pretty different. There aren't people just sitting around, you know, whacking coconuts open, just yakking out on the street corners. They're doing stuff. We have a busy culture. And it takes a lot of energy to live and to support ourselves. So culture is a huge difference. What else?
I think time management. How there's so much thing vying for our time.
You're very close to what I'm trying to draw, because it was his job. For me, if it was my job, if you said, go preach the gospel, Mike Cater, another example. Well, it's his job. Well, that's just part of my job. And it's just part of your job. So time management means there are other things vying for my attention and things I have to give leadership to, things I have to organize, things I have to manage that were not a part of Jesus' life. And it's appropriate. Now, maybe we try to manage too much. I mean, there's always a refining, for sure, of our values and what we feel responsible for. And God may want to do some of that. But in your best scenario, it's going to take you longer to survive than it did in that environment. I mean, just paying insurance, and just you need to make money just so you don't. Yeah, absolutely. You don't have to live very high on the hog. You still need $500 to $1,000 a month just kind of live here if you're going to function. You can't live much cheaper than that unless you mooch off your parents, which is always a great option if you want to preach the gospel. Just, which may not be a tolerable solution to not having a job, but for many it seems to work. You'll have to decide. So it was his job, and that's different. It was his only job. There wasn't that competition for it. There's one more big one.
Those that have a spouse or a family.
Yeah, family. That his whole identity was to do this one thing. And we walk in a variety of identities. I'm going to throw it out there. Is anybody here standing on the street corner and have somebody walk in with someone who's lame or crippled and say, can you take care of this for me? And you can. There was miracles. That's a huge difference in how he conducted himself and the conversations that he was able to start. Regardless of their motivations for coming to him, some of them were incredibly self-serving. They go, oh, Jesus, you're a great teacher. Yeah, throw out the miracles and see how many crowds. And that was part of his plan. It was to demonstrate. It's not a condemnation of that. It's just a reality. And God uses that to establish the gospel in a lot of places. There'll be a season where there's incredible healings just to validate, hey, there's something unusual here. So we have his job, it's kind of his whole identity, miracles, culture, where we can find relationship. Technology is a huge difference. There's a reason they all kind of hung out and yacked on their porches, because that's the only way they could connect and have converse. Well, now I'm going to get on a plane this afternoon, and there is not one single person that has any interest in connecting with anyone because they got something in their ears or they're watching something, and I may too, if DirecTV has the game on as we're flying. But there's this isolation that's very different. So what's the same? What can we believe is true as we live incarnationally? Absolutely. Yep. There is a human need, and one of the big ones we talk about regularly. Obviously, there's a fallenness need of the gospel to restore a relationship with them. But there's this idea of aloneness, of being isolated, of not feeling connected, and there's all kinds of technological and other broken ways that we try to resolve that need. We satisfy that need, but it's still there. There is that desire for connection. The same as people's response to love. It's exactly the same. When someone genuinely feels loved, there is often a response and an openness to connection and relationship. So there's lots of tools in that. Now here's the summary of what's better than miracles. Well, Jesus said it was love. It is our magic bullet. By this will all men know that you are sent from the Father if you have love one for another. So that's a pretty high call. I'll zip through a couple things here and we'll close off. The tools that we have compassion. We can genuinely care for people. I can't do miracles. But God says love is even better than that. So I can have a genuine care. I can be open to connection. I can be emotionally present. I can be ready when someone is serving me a pizza to be open to relationship and reach out to them, or walking down the street or working at the gym. My heart can be, I am open. I am open to relationship. I can listen for needs. I can be in a place of connecting, which is Jesus was. He was always emotionally present. He was fully wherever he was. And if the guy drops through the roof, that's where he was. He's in the middle of a sentence and a great sermon, I'm sure. And here he is. Okay, now I'm here. We have that ability, and that's one of the tools we have. We also have the ability to meet physical needs way beyond the way most of us think, because we clutch our money, we clutch our stuff, we clutch our possessions and say, this is mine and it's not anyone else's. God says, no, I gave you that to be a blessing. Remember, you are me incarnate. If I had that right now, what would I do with it? Would I put my name on it and lock it up? Or would I freely give that which God has given me? Now, there's a balance point. Obviously, we have to pay insurance next month too. But do we need to pay it for 10 years? Does it matter if our stuff? I mean, do we have to have enough resources right now under our control to meet our needs forever? And if some of our stuff disappears, is that okay? Is it really God's? Is it really God's? I've got certain tools I've bought 4 or 5 times. They're popular tools, evidently. I have no idea where they go. Occasionally they circle back around. I just don't care. I just don't care. Sledgehammers are popular. Not very many people want to invest in a sledgehammer. I probably have owned a half a dozen sledgehammers. It's gone. Well, let's go get another one. Oh, gosh, so much. No! God knows exactly where my sledgehammer is. And he's okay with wherever it is. Because if he wasn't okay with it wherever it is, it would be sitting right where I put it last. Or think I put it last. We have to understand God has given us tools if we're willing to use them. No care and act. No care and act. When we love people, there will be it first, and please keep this in mind. Living incarnation, this is going to trap you, because we evangelize in order to accomplish something, to grow the church, make ourselves better, check the box, whatever. Part of why we do that is because we think it's the right thing to do, and if we do it, we're righteous. The first reason we live and bear the image of God in the flesh is so that people get a chance to see the image of God and experience his blessing flowing through human agents, regardless of the outcome. regardless of if you get a chance to share the gospel, regardless of if they say thank you, regardless of if they think you're awesome or wonderful or they spit in your face, we have a responsibility because Jesus had people spit in his face, and that's what you follow. Please keep that in mind. If you do it exactly right, you may get spit, okay. Well, the image of God would say, bless you anyway. Oh, I so wish you could know the God I know. I so wish you could know that and know him. Second, it does build trust and opens doors to be known and share the good news. That may happen a lot. That may happen a little. It may be your part of the story may be very small in someone's life. If you hear someone's testimony, when I look back on my life and I'm reflective enough and introspective enough, I look at life circumstances, how many people did things that shaped who I was, what I was searching for. God had agents all over the place throughout my early life pushing me in this direction where I go, whoa, there it is. There's the story of God. And I believed it, and I was saved. But it wasn't the one person who got to close the deal. In fact, nobody actually did that with me. I was listening to them share with someone else. And it could have happened in a coffee shop. It happened to be with a good friend. And he got to know that his story changed my life. But it could have just as easily been me overhearing that story because God had positioned all of this. And it was through people being willing to be used by him. I just want to share one quick story to close. It was just very encouraging at our Wednesday night, or Tuesday night last week, conversation. Trudy was in our group and just sharing the story of a friend who doesn't seem to be very open to the gospel, maybe even just uncomfortable with the idea of faith people, church people. Maybe it's hurt. I don't know what her whole story is. I'd love to hear it. I'd love to understand it. But right now I don't, so I'm not trying to put her in any light other than it would not be normative for her to think highly of church people. And they had an experience as a family, not the Coates, but this other family, where they lost a pet. And Bob and Trudy just stepped in, cared, agreed with them, were present. No strings, no agenda, just, I care, I know that hurts. And this would not be a family who would think, oh, wow, these are church people. These are good people. I really love these. That would not be their first thought. I don't know the length of time between the death of the pet, where they took initiative to grieve with those who grieve. But the gentleman in this family lost his dad. His dad passed. The only thing he said, the only person he went to talk to, I need to talk to Bob. I need to talk to Bob. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes when we're not in the place, they go, I wish I knew someone like Bob where I am now. I'm going to start looking for somebody like Bob. But we can all be that person. And trust God that in time, he keeps score and he will bear fruit. There's nothing we do. Oh, you got my sledgehammer. I got ripped off. Nah, I probably have a shed full of tools scattered back that have been scattered, brought back to me in the new heaven and new earth. I'm just going to have a lot of tools. Or I won't. They'll get melted down and do something better. Either way, God's really good at keeping score. And if we really are using Jesus as our model, we'll be willing to have our lives and our stuff and our energy and our money and our reputation given away so that we can really bear the image of what Jesus would be doing if he was living your life. It's not a cute phrase. That's a reality. What would he do if he was living my life? He had my gifts. God, what would he do? And we all have the opportunity, and we can either rest in the flesh and demand our rights and push him away and say, I know what I want and you're not it. Or we can step into that will and be image bearers. And that's the journey we're on. And there's a couple other little exercises coming up. They're kind of fun. I pray you'll take some time. And even those kind of, they call it field trip kind of things, that you engage in that over the next few days and come ready to share your heart. And when we come back together on Tuesday, Father, I thank you for this day. I just thank you for the flock's patience here has went a little long. God, I just had things I think you wanted to communicate to us. Help us to love you. Help us to bear your image. What a glorious call. What a glorious existence that we get to represent you in the earth. In Jesus' name, amen.